This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Wednesday, January the 27th, the very best bits of today's show, lovingly curated by producer Shruti Rajendran, who's not even in the room to tell us what's on the show. Shruti, come on, jaldi, yalla. Just because it's Republic Day yesterday doesn't mean you get the day off. What are we going to start with? Let's start with me and my interview with Ahmed bin Sulayem, which I thought was brilliant, but am I over-egging the pudding?
No, he was so candid and a bit controversial, can I say that?
He's very candid. He's a very senior business leader. He's the executive chairman of DMCC, very significant business. He's been running it for nearly two decades now. And he was very honest about expanding in 2021, about Israel, about the diamond industry. So you don't want to miss that interview with Ahmed bin Sulayem. That's an absolute cracker. But it's not the only thing we've got today, is it? We've also got we've been having a chat.
Okay. It was about the IMF and the Microsoft work from home.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, that's Khatija Haque, Chief Economist, Emirates NBD, talking about a new IMF report. Right, that's really good. Yeah, I mean, us chatting is hit or miss, but Khatija's really good. And finally, Brandy's interview with Richard Quest was brilliant.
It was. He's done a program about Dubai, and Brandy asked him, how do you make a travel program during the pandemic? It was really cool.
And he's really good. It's a really good show today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a belter.
It was. It was difficult to pick two out of the six interviews we had.
Right. Sit back, relax, and enjoy one of the best ever Bite-Sized Business Breakfasts.
Right. Time now for a little bit of this.
Ask Serena.
SK in studio with us. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. It's great to have you on board. Let's get the latest then, because obviously we had an update last night. Cases and vaccines. Where are we standing?
So new high of cases. 3,601 new COVID-19 cases were announced yesterday. That's after more than 175,200 tests were conducted across the country. So your overall tally right now, 285,147. That includes your fatalities, which now stands at 805, because we had seven people announce that they had died yesterday. 3,890 recoveries, so a total of 259,194 recoveries. And of course, the active cases at the moment, 25,148. That is a drop. We have been seeing a consistent drop over this week.
So that's the cases. Have we also got an indication of where we're at with vaccines?
So when it comes to the doses administered, more than 2.6 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been administered in the UAE so far. That's a distribution rate of 27.07 doses per 100 people.
So that's where we're at with vaccines. Obviously, you kept an eagle eye on the presser last night. Any other sort of figures or milestones to come out of it?
Yeah, well, some very positive figures. It was Dr. Saif Al-Dahiri, the official spokesman of the National Emergency Crisis and Disasters Management Authority. He was speaking last night. He explained that we have now conducted more than 24.8 million tests since the start of the pandemic. That's COVID-19 tests, making the UAE the first nation in the world where COVID testing has exceeded population size. He also said that the UAE ranks second in the world for daily distribution of COVID-19 vaccine doses. That was last week, with an average of 6.06 doses per 100 people. We currently stand fifth in the world in terms of the overall availability of a vaccine. That's after the United States, China, the UK and Israel. And the measures taken by the UAE have led to the country being ranked first in the Middle East and third globally for public satisfaction with procedures to tackle the pandemic.
Dr. Farida, was she speaking at the same event or a different event?
No, it was an online virtual panel discussion. This was quite interesting. So you had Dr. Farida on yesterday, Dr. Farida Al-Hosni, official spokesperson for the UAE health sector. She was speaking during a virtual panel, been organised in conjunction with the Abu Dhabi Public Health Centre. Now, she was saying that people may need to get COVID-19 vaccinated every year, a bit like the flu shot, which is something that has been addressed already on the show as well. But she was explaining that it would be down to the different variants of the virus that could lead to the requirement for people to get vaccinated every year. She also spoke about how COVID-19 vaccines could be administered to children in the future. Currently, COVID-19 vaccines are available for those 16 years old and above. There's ongoing clinical studies on three vaccines, she was saying, that could be administered to children in the future.
Interesting one, that one, because, I don't know, straw poll around the studio. When was the last time you got a flu jab?
Never.
And yet you go to your doctor and they say, oh, you should get your flu jab every year, regardless of your age, especially, you know, they recommend it for kids, but also for adults. You're meant to have your boosters, aren't you? Flu season, flu jab, that's when you're meant to do. There's always a sort of campaign. Obviously, COVID-19 is different, but given the importance of the vaccine at the moment, is that going to be the case? And is there going to therefore be concerted efforts and projects and initiatives put in place to ensure that everyone does get vaccinated every year, if that's the way we're moving forward?
I think you've also got to look at it as, like, there was a stage where the flu was very, very dominant, a bit like the COVID-19 current situation as well. So obviously a vaccine was made available. It was important for the time, just how it is right now. And eventually now we've reached the stage where it's less so because it's less severe. And again, as more people are vaccinated now, which is hence the importance to get vaccinated, it's creating that almost herd immunity where there's going to be less transfer amongst people and making it less severe. And that's the key right now. It's controlling it and just trying to live with it.
Mm. Green is good, isn't it? Green for go. Well, Green Mile's not great, is it? But apart from that, Green List. What's on the Green List?
So when it comes to travel, Abu Dhabi's updated destinations on its Green List. I know Richard was referring to this earlier. So passengers flying to Abu Dhabi from the Maldives, Australia, Singapore, Falkland Islands and Greenland will no longer need to quarantine on arrival. You do still need your PCR test on arrival, of course. It's the latest update from the Department of Culture and Tourism, Abu Dhabi. So obviously they first published the list in December. It's updated regularly. The full list is on the Air and New Centre app. But obviously, just to give you a bit of a background, Australia is already on the list, Bahrain, Hong Kong, New Zealand, Oman, but again, full list up on the Air and New Centre app.
I'm smirking only because I'm thinking, I'm trying to work out how you get from Stanley in the Falkland Islands to Abu Dhabi. I'm not sure there's a direct flight between those two at the moment, but it would mean you'd have to transit through other countries. Yeah. And I don't know if you are transiting through other countries. Does that mean that you therefore...
Would it affect your quarantine?
Would it affect whether you actually have to come in or not?
I think, because obviously, yeah. It's definitely everything is updated through many of the airline websites as well. But we do update as well on the Air and New Centre.
Let's do inspections, shall we? Talking of updates.
Okay, so we've seen 14 commercial outlets fined in Dubai. The good news is that no closure orders or warnings were issued. That was from Dubai Economy, and they're still urging the public to report any violations through the Dubai Consumer app. Meanwhile, Dubai Municipality, they shut four establishments. You had a shisha cafe in Al Qusais, a laundry, two fitness centres in Al Bashar 1. They also fined four outlets and issued warnings to 24 others. Dubai Tourism shut down five venues and fined 15 others. And this was over a one-week period. This took place between January 16th to the 23rd. And that's because they didn't follow precautionary measures. So again, just that same message reiterating that if you are out and about and you do spot a venue, or you're in an area that you feel you've got a bit of concern with regards to individuals or establishments following those COVID-19 regulations, do report it.
Let's go to another new initiative. We've been talking about restaurants giving reductions on bills. We heard about Kareem Uber doing something similar. New initiative from taxi services here.
Yeah, so the RTA, Dubai's taxis Hala service, they are offering residents a free ride home from select vaccination centres. So it's all part of the drive to just support those that are coming forward to get vaccinated. Offer is valid until February 18th. So this covers the Hala cabs as well as the Hala vans. It's for rides from 10 vaccination centres. I won't give you the full list, but I'll give you a couple. Al Ittihad Health Centre, Al Bashar Primary Health Centre, Al Safa. You've got one central at the World Trade Centre and the Dubai Parks and Resorts. But yep, you need the promo code HALAVAC on the app and you'll be able to avail the free ride home after getting vaccinated.
Last one, this caught me off guard a little yesterday because I was looking at this story and the story read, David Guetta, Dubai Guetta resident. Guetta?
David Guetta.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Not Guetta, no?
No, it's not.
Guetta.
Guetta, okay. Yeah. David Guetta, he's going to be DJing.
Rihanna.
Rihanna.
Okay,
yeah. Just each to their own. Sputnik V. David Guetta will be DJing in Dubai at the Burj Al Arab, but it's going to be on top of the helipad. So, and you're all going to be able to attend virtually because it's free. It's going to be aired on his YouTube channel Saturday, February the 6th. That's from 6 p.m. Dubai time. So it's all part of his United at Home show series. He's already performed in Miami, New York, and the Louvre in Paris as well. It's supporting UNICEF and Dubai Cares Education Uninterrupted campaign. So far, they've raised more than $1.6 million.
Brilliant. But when did he become a resident?
He actually calls Dubai home. He says he's dedicating his performance to the city of Dubai he calls home.
Really?
Yeah, I think maybe. Well, he's probably got them dotted around the place.
We love celebrating famous residents here. And that's the first time I've heard about it. I'm not sure. Have you been round to Dave's house yet or not?
Not been invited.
No.
But I suspect our tax rates are lower than France's.
Croissants round at Dave's. Let's go. Serena Kelly, really appreciate it. If people want to find out more.
Aaron News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
So I've been down in Jumeirah Lake Towers this week at DMCC, Dubai Multi Commodities Centre, because I had a question. Earlier on, this week, last week, we had a story that DMCC, the Free Zone, had 2025 new companies register in 2020. And I thought, hang on, worst recession in a century around the world. How on earth is a Free Zone doing that? So I thought, well, the person to put the question to is the boss. The executive chairman and chief executive officer of DMCC is Ahmed bin Sulaym. So I went down there, socially distanced, and caught up with him about what's happening. We talk about a range of issues. Israel is front of mind for him. Diamonds, we talk about coffee. We talk about leadership in a crisis. And of course, real estate, bricks and mortar. But I began by asking him that question about those companies, more than 2,000 new companies registering last year. How did you do it?
What I'm really proud is that we were registering businesses till about the last 2 days, right before the new year. And yeah, we ended up with 2,025 companies. We have 92 Israeli companies that have applied. Two of them are sorted, they're set up, and I'm waiting for the other 90 company to join. Today, right now, while I'm talking to you, we have a diamond auction still going on downstairs. You have buyers from Belgium, you have buyers from Surat and Barat, and they're happy. It's business. They've adapted. I felt DMCC should go after the business, kind of like a counterpunch, if you will. And the property team are doing great job at the Uptown Tower. They didn't skip a beat. BISX have been doing an amazing job. We're building one floor every 6 days right now. We've passed the office floors. We're probably midway within the boutique hotel, the Sobran. So not hesitating was really important. Like, we moved fast, and our engagement isn't a scripted narrative. It is almost live. You know, so that's. I think this year was really special for us.
There's a lot to unpick in there, so let's take them stage by stage. First of all, you mentioned Israel. 92 companies have applied. You've been to Israel. You've opened an office yourself in Israel. We know, in general terms, it's a big opportunity for the UAE. But let's drill down for a Business Breakfast audience into the specifics. Sure. Where is the opportunity specifically for people listening to you this morning when it comes to trade between Dubai and Israel, UAE and Israel, the region and Israel?
Well, the UAE has made life more convenient for Israel as far as logistics are concerned, as far as agro-business is concerned. They used to ship via other countries that have a cold normalization with them, not a warm one. And for some of their agri, it would, for example, the cherry tomato would be branded from an Arabic country as if it's made from there, but they don't have cherry tomato. It was invented in Israel, and it comes from there, but they repackage it. I knew this for the past last 19 years since I've been going there. I never talked about it, but this at least untangles things from we're, our relationship with Israel right now is no different than our relationship with the US, UK, Germany, China, and all of these countries. They have their strong points, they have their good side, and they have their own challenges. It's no different from any other country, in my opinion. Yes, we're not ignorant to the fact that there is a bit of a dispute, but if you listen to His Excellency Yusuf Al-Atayba and Anwar Gargash, they've shared to the world the reality of the matter. And I really thought it would happen maybe 3 years back, 4 years back, maybe a year or two after the UAE hosted the World Bank and IMF meetings. But it took
a while. Wow, that takes me back.
Yes, it does.
That's what, 18 years ago?
About, give or take. And I was comfortable when that happened because I didn't know whether anyone went to Israel. You know, we don't have social media in those days, not the way it is today. And I did go. Most of my trips, if not all of them, really has to do with attending events, conferences, international businesses, where I need to protect the UAE's position, whether it be against corrupt NGOs or against or some dispute or something. You need to be there. If you're not there, the narrative is set by that meeting, at the end of the meeting. So it was more of a national interest. The same way, you know, Israel, despite the boycott policy and all that, during the swimming competitions, during the dentistry conference, they send their best because they don't want to lose out. They want to make sure people understand where they are and all that. It's a global initiative. You know, with the World Cup happening soon in Qatar, there was no dispute that Israelis are gonna participate if they qualify. You know, they cannot tell at the time Platini and Blatter, whatever their names are, they cannot say, you know what, we're gonna have it, but no matter what happens, we're not hosting Israeli fans and Israeli football players. Nothing. This isn't about now. This is about the second, third, and fourth generation. We do not want to be dragged into nonsense and throw away the future of the next Emirati generations. Some might not be able to digest it. Not all of them have the clear vision and the sensibility that His Highness has.
Well, that's a natural segue to diamonds. Mm-hmm. And we're on the 50th floor in Almas Tower, and maybe about 200 or 300 meters below us is one of the most thriving diamond markets in the world. I think we're going to pop down there in a few minutes' time. We had last month, December, here, by some measures, the busiest diamond auction in the world, I believe. Talk to me about the diamond business here. It's faced challenges globally over the past year to 18 months or so, and what's happening in Dubai now and in the future.
I spoke to Chaim Plochnik, I believe, in 2018, and I asked him, what would bring you to our diamond exchange?
Who is Chaim?
Chaim Plochnik of Plochnik Diamonds. He's based in Antwerp. He travels to Botswana and comes back to Belgium. He does Israel as well, and he works over there. He does have some partners, Indian partners in the UAE, and that's how they work things out. And he said, Ahmed, I'm happy with Antwerp because I deal with the Lebanese community, Christian or Muslims, and you know I deal with the Indian and the obviously the Jewish community, and you know we all coexist. There's a synagogue, there's a temple, there's a mosque, and it's all fine. I don't have that in Dubai. And I said, it looks like it's coming from what I'm reading. Would you come to Dubai if we have a direct flight from Tel Aviv to Dubai? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And that's just, I didn't have any inside information. It's just hopeful that the world will be more peaceful and we'll move on and all that. But he paused. You know, I don't know if that factored in his head or not, but today it's the reality. It wasn't like a condition that they were pushing on us. That would come when there are tenders or conferences happening here. Per policy of the World Federation of Diamond Bourses, a diamond member of any exchange has to have access to events or his business. If they're blocked, then we are not really part of the World Federation of Diamond Bourses. Same with football, same with other events that are international.
Right then, part two of our interview now with Ahmed bin Salem, who's the executive chairman and chief executive down at DMCC, Dubai Multi-Commodity Centre, the free zone that's based in Jumeirah Lake Towers. We're going to speak, first of all, about real estate, because they're still building a very posh, big new skyscraper called Uptown in DMCC. And I asked him, do we really need any more real estate, Ahmed? And he explains why he thinks we do. But just to give it some context, there's two buildings that he refers to. Now, one is Uptown DMCC, which is the new tower that's currently under construction, and he talks about that. But the second thing he references is a building called 1JLT,
which is down in Jumeirah Lake Towers. It's one of their newer buildings. It's a grade A office block. And that's been open for 3 or 4 years now. So he talks about how that, the point he makes, and you'll hear him now, is that if you've got really, really good office blocks, then there's actually a shortage of them and that there is no shortage of tenants for those. So just to give you some context of the two buildings that he references to make his point, those are the two. But more broadly, this is he, in his own words, Ahmed bin Salem of DMCC.
Well, let me ask you about real estate. We're here in Nalmas Tower on the 50th floor, and I'm looking out over, you know, Jumeirah Lake Towers. I can see, I think it's Emirates Hills Golf Club, which is going to host the Omega Dubai Desert Classic in just a few days' time. I can see Sheikh Zayed Road and so on. Mm-hmm. Real estate is an important part of what you've built here at DMCC and Jumeirah Lake Towers. And you touched on this earlier, that you're continuing to develop a new tower or new towers. Mm-hmm. Explain again to a sceptical Business Breakfast listener, and they are quite sceptical. We get the text messages saying, well, why do we need more towers? Why do we need more real estate in Dubai? Explain what it is you're building and why you're building it and why you think there is demand for that going forward.
Just like football, just like basketball, there are some clubs, there's not enough space to fit everyone there, pre-COVID. And there are some clubs that are not performing. So just because one region within Dubai or the GCC is struggling, doesn't mean we have an oversupply. It just means they have to look at themselves in the mirror, see where the challenge is, because not everything is just supply and demand. It's the landlord, the convenience, the supply of the access to the area. I had a pushback on developing one JLT, saying there are a lot of offices. I'm giving one JLT as an example, and I'll give also Uptown Tower, where you have a columnless building because the columns go up with the glass, and it's one of the few buildings that can serve the multinationals that need one full floor, two floors, or three floors. We knew that these companies, when they come to Dubai, they don't find it. They might find the square footage, but it's spread out. Head of HSBC or head of any organization, multinational organization, doesn't want to go to 4 or 5 departments, go through traffic. If there's one address where they meet with everyone, it's convenient. The doubt was more, there's so many offices. Yes, but not good offices. Till today, it's fully leased. It's 100% leased. In any case, time proved the naysayer wrong. It's 100% occupied. Had they known this would be the case, I don't know. If you some folks are not wired. That's why you have some champs in sports. So I forget the hockey player from Canada.
Wayne Gretzky.
Steve Jobs quotes him. And he says, I do not go to where the puck is. I always go to where it will be. And in DMCC, we do our best to apply that. These buildings, yes, it's not the time now. By the time it's built, the demand's there. And you know what? If we did not have enough space right now, we would not be able to register 2,025 companies last year. Because if we don't have space, it's not easy to let them operate from inland and then come back to us. No, they'll go to another area, another city, another country. So the fact that we have the infrastructure, now, to explain to the listeners, it's 20 floors office space, LEEDs Gold, 20,000 square feet per space. Then it's 11 stories boutique hotel. We've signed with Sofitel, the So brand. We're calling it So Uptown. They're finishing a floor every 6 days right now. That's last year, and it's continuing on this year.
Final question, just to wrap up in 60 seconds. As a leader of a large organization here in Dubai, you've had work from home, people coming back to work now. How are you motivating people? How are you structuring your team at the moment? Are you coming into the office? Are you working from home? How have you approached that? Just as a human being, Ahmed, with people who you know and like, and people who have frustrations and everyday concerns, how have you approached that over the past year? And how will you approach that over the coming few months?
You know, it's a collective effort. I work closely with Ahmed Sharif and Farial. You know, they manage the team. I'm traveling a lot, and I always worry that I disconnect with them when I'm on travel. So I do engage with them. I don't know if I'm the most CEO that touches bases with everyone in the office, including the reception, the cleaners from Concordia. I actually clean with them. I find out what their name is. I thank them.
You clean with them?
Yes, I do. I do that every now and then. And it's my way of
I'm looking at your colleague and he's nodding here. He really cleans with the cleaners?
Yes, every few months. To my luck, the last few months was during the hottest time. But I did manage. And it's also to appreciate, you know, I just don't look at the numbers and all that. I need to understand the human side of it and the impact of AI or pushing it to work during different times, etc., and events, all of these things. And I'm setting an example. I'm not asking you to do something that I wouldn't do. That is very key for me. No matter how crazy it looks.
You were trying to lift coffee bags the other day, I saw on social media. You say they're quite heavy.
I need to work out. I'm going to be able to carry the coffee bags. That's my target in working out. Strengthening my core, doing the stretches I need on my back and all that. And hopefully I build the muscles. Because with being 42 and going to 43 in March 13th, it's all about maintenance. You build your muscles to maintain your joints, as I was told by Mahi bin Hindi.
It's been great talking to you. Appreciate your time today. Shukran jazeelan.
Have fun.
It's the voice of Ahmed bin Salem, Executive Chairman, Chief Executive Officer of DMCC. There you go. You've got to work out if you want to lift a coffee bag.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right. Khatija Haque, what is she talking to us about this morning? Well, she's talking to us about that new IMF outlook that has come out. The IMF revising upwards its global economic forecast from where it was sitting in the last quarter. But there are a lot of buts. This is Khatija Haque, Chief Economist and Head of Research at Emirates NBD.
The IMF upgraded its forecast for world GDP growth to 5.5% in 2021 from 5.2% previously. The main reasons were the coronavirus vaccine rollout, and also they're expecting additional policy support in some of the major economies, most particularly the US. However, the report did note that there are risks to the outlook from the new waves and strains of coronavirus infection, as well as the fact that growth would be uneven across different countries. The main driver of the upgrade in this year's global growth outlook was the US economy. So that was revised up significantly. Most of the other developed markets growth forecasts were actually slightly lower compared to the October report. In terms of our region, the IMF kept the Middle East Central Asia forecast unchanged at 3%. But they did downgrade the estimate for Saudi Arabia's GDP growth to 2.6% from 3.1% previously. We will get a full breakdown of countries in the region when they publish the regional economic outlook in April.
Khatija Haque, Emirates NBD. Let's have a look at some earnings. I know, Rich, you've been looking at Microsoft. We've got Johnson & Johnson, 3M, American Express and others. And Apple is the biggie that people are looking at today.
Well, it's your phrase, Brandy, pandemic winners that have been reporting, haven't they, in many ways. 3M, you mentioned the masks earlier on. Johnson & Johnson, of course, is a healthcare company. And
American Express, what have we all been doing during the pandemic? We have been buying stuff online.
Using our plastic cards, yeah. Microsoft cracking numbers, record revenue, record profit, and record share price for Microsoft. The interesting one, okay, yeah, we all were using Teams, we get that, and AI. The one that surprised me was LinkedIn, which is a Microsoft subsidiary. Revenue from job adverts was up by 23% over the past year. That's the one I didn't expect. Yeah, we've all been on Teams if you're lucky enough to be working from home. But job adverts up 23%? Why do we think that might be? I can't quite figure it out.
People looking for HR experts, cybersecurity experts, someone who knows how to use Teams?
Or maybe it's the fact that the recruitment is going increasingly online and is less to do with the face-to-face of recruitment consultants. I'm not sure, but for whatever reason, Microsoft had a really, really good time of it. And this evening, it's tech earnings week, isn't it? We got Apple coming up.
Could we see a $100 billion quarter?
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We're going to do a little bit of navel-gazing here in the Business Breakfast. We're going to look at ourselves, or at least through the lens of someone else. That lens being with the CNN team, we are joined now by veteran CNN journalist Richard Quest, who has turned his attention to Dubai for his travel program, Quest's World of Wonder. New episode just gone out in the States where he's tried to figure out what makes Dubai tick. And we're very pleased to speak to him this morning. Richard, good morning.
Good morning to you. I should say good evening from New York, where I am at the moment. And it's coming up towards 10 o'clock at night here on a very cold, I need to say, very cold winter's night.
Well, we think it's cold here, Richard, but I think we have a slightly different definition of the word than you do.
Absolutely.
Tell me, what are you trying to do with Quest's World of Wonder, and what were you doing with us?
Right, so the idea is basically to go to interesting places and meet fascinating people, because it's through their eyes that we learn what is the DNA of a place. There's plenty of programs and shows and this, that, and the other that will tell you the best restaurant or the best sites or whatever. But I think today's, not tourists, today's travelers, that's what we are. We're travelers. Those of us who want to go, see, experience, and leave enriched. And I think in the case of Quest of World of Wonder, what we do is we go to the interesting places like Dubai, and we meet the fascinating people like Ramesh Shukla, like Karen Stanbury, like the Sultan, all the people that we met that give perspective. And what was really important with Dubai is that we got away from the glitz and the glamour. We got away from the so-called, you know, the frippery of it. And we actually asked, what is it that made the place successful? I've been going there for 20 years, and I've always wondered, what is it? Why has Dubai been, Brandy, such a success?
So what did you find in our DNA, Richard?
I think what's in the DNA is, if you go back to the founding sheikhs of the sheikdoms and when it all came together, and you go back even further, to go within 50 years from Bedouins, nomadic Bedouins, right the way through to the oil, right the way through to today, it really comes down to trade. It really comes down to trade, deals, a mentality of acumen. As Sultan put it, we had to make the most of innovation. We had to make the most. We didn't even have water, and we had to make the most of innovation. And if you look around you at today's Dubai, and you then extrapolate to, say, the space program and what else that's involved with, and I'm not blinded to the faults of the place, but it is a modern miracle in the Middle East that it has managed to achieve such success in such a relatively short period of time.
Speaking of success, World of Wonder is a travel program. How do you make a successful travel program in a pandemic?
A very good question. Yes, I'm asking myself the same thing every day. What we do is we have a really good team that spends a lot of time working out the restrictions, the regulations. I'm on my 15th COVID test. I'm about to leave for Rwanda next month. And again, Brandy, look, you're right. It is very difficult. I mean, I know that the cases numbers are rising in the UAE like they are elsewhere, but the lockdowns of the UK or the restrictions in the US, I mean, we are going out for dinner in -2, -5, -10 degrees when it is absolutely freezing outside, but people are still going to restaurants with a blanket, with a heated hot water bottle to keep restaurants open here in this city. It is, I don't know just how much the rest of the world understands, particularly places like Dubai, just the perilous and parlous situation that many places like New York are facing, where I'm looking out my window now and just all I can see is boarded up shops.
What do you think, Richard, is going to get us all travelling again? Not necessarily beat the pandemic, but what's going to get people back in the air again? You spend your time speaking to the great and good of the travel industry. What do you think?
Excellent question. Excellent. And it can be summed up in a word: confidence. I can talk and tell you that getting on a plane is the safest form of travel. I can wax lyrical about the HEPA hospital filters. I can tell you how the airflow goes from the top of the cabin down, not across. Therefore, you're safe. But you won't necessarily believe it or accept it until you have confidence. And that's what it is. So it's the confidence that the procedures in place make you safe. The confidence that if you get stranded, or you won't get stranded, first of all, by a quarantine on the way out there or on the way back. And ultimately, the confidence that if you were, God forbid, to fall ill, that you would be able to be in a place where decent medical treatment could easily and reasonably be obtained. So, yes, one thing we know, Randy, one thing we absolutely know, every study, every bit of research shows there is a pent-up demand for travel. And as soon as people are able to, we saw that at Thanksgiving over here, we saw it at Christmas. Once people know they can travel and travel safely, they will be on the road again. I guarantee it. take it to the bank.
But what's going to crystallise it, Richard? Is it going to be testing regimes? Is it going to be a vaccine or testing passport like IATA's trialling?
So, at its simplest, I think it is going to be the vaccine. Yes, absolutely. The more you people get vaccinated, the safer they will feel. Of course, they have to remember they can still pass on the virus, but the vaccine is crucial. A testing regime is also crucial because it's going to be many months, if not several years, before we're at a situation of herd immunity throughout the world. There is, the developed OECD, the rich world, if you like, the rich world may travel on the back of a vaccine. The developing world will only travel because they can be tested and there is an element of security. So those two things are absolutely essential to rekindle, if you like, the spirit. Ultimately, it will be the vaccine. It will be the ability to travel. And when it does, I think you're going to really see a great benefit. And I think if you look at Dubai, the way Dubai has positioned itself, maybe some people have criticized it so far in the way it's done it, but I think positioning yourself for a recovery when it happens is going to be essential, and that goes across the board. Only today I was talking to several Wall Street economists about what they think is going to happen, and I was talking to the CEO of Bank of America, who I asked, Brian Moynihan, I said, listen, Brian, is it your feeling that once the vaccination takes hold and the numbers increase, the economy does roar ahead, if you like? He said, yes, absolutely. If we look at last year, after Q3 on the back of Q2, Q4 things start going down again. Q1 of this year, things are difficult. As we go to Q2, 3 and 4 of this year, I think you're going to see a resurgence and a strong, strong recovery. And by the way, I know the head of Emirates also believes that travel will come back strongly.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning, the veteran CNN journalist Richard Quest. He has just put together, and indeed it has just aired in the States, the latest episode of Quest's World of Wonder. It is a travel program. He has focused on Dubai, trying to get the very essence of the city, as he said, they're away from the glitz and glamour, and see what makes it tick.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.